Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to GLP First Quarter Financial Year 2016 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Friday, 31st of July, 2015. I would now like to hand the call over to Amber Goel. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning for our first quarter FY 2016 earnings briefing call. Our presentation materials and webcast are all available on our website. Today, you'll hear from our CEO, Ming Mei, who will provide an overview of our results, including discussing recent transactions. Ming will be followed by Steve Shuey, our Chief Operating Officer, who will cover our operating highlights. And then our CFO will close up the call, providing an overview of our financials and balance sheet. We will then close the call with a Q&A. I encourage people to ask two questions and ask them together. We note that all numbers that we're expressing today are in U.S. dollars, our reporting currency, unless otherwise stated. Thank you, and I'll now hand it over to Ming.
Well, thank you, Amber, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for all joining us today. This quarter marked a solid start for the new financial year for us and each business segments, property operations, development, and fund management. Our earnings are up 49%, and our group leasing are up 40% year-on-year. Despite the headline news declaring macroeconomic slowdowns in some markets, domestic consumption continued to drive customer demand in all our markets. Value creation from development and recurring fund management fees continue to improve an important part of our earnings. During the quarter, we completed $453 million of development with 40% value creation margin. This translates to GLP shares of $78 million development profits. Fund management revenue in the first quarter is $36 million, and we expect full year to be at $150 million for the year. We strengthened our capital structure with the completion of more than $1.3 billion of financing in the first quarter of 2016. And we have entered into a definite agreement to acquire U.S. logistics portfolio from IIT of $4.55 billion. I will go into more detail later. We have also recently established our second China logistics fund, CLF2, leading to a growth of fund management platform AUM by 36% to $27 billion under management. Of that, only $17 billion is invested in generating fees, give us more capacity to grow in the future. Before going into more details on earnings, I'd like to recap these two exciting announcements that we just did and the rationale behind them. On IIT, is arguably one of the highest quality portfolio in the U.S. Of the $4.55 billion of portfolio, comprised 58 million square feet of GFA. About 80% is concentrated in 10 major institutional markets. The larger market include LA, Metro DC, and Pennsylvania. Also create a lot of synergies because 97% of the acquired assets are located in the markets where we currently operate in. Existing team in the U.S. will manage acquired assets. When we did the original transaction, we noted the strength of the team and ability to scale the platform. And we are now realizing those synergies with limited additional headcounts, mostly back office, but all the senior staff and senior teams are already in place. The portfolio is 93% leased, and we're focused to increase that to 95%. Currently, the portfolio, we're entering at a 5.6% cap rate, and we have received some questions about this cap rate. The 5.6% is based on today's existing lease ratio of portfolio. If we take the lease ratio up to 95% and then get some additional rental growth, the 5.6 cap rate will turn to 6% once stabilized. These comps are very favorable relative to the recent market transactions. We believe the portfolio is rented 5 to 10% below market rent, so we have the ability to renew at a higher market rent when this lease expires. And the quality and location can't be replicated today. Again, this was externally managed, and we're able to syndicate this and generate fees, and we did not pay for the value of the platform. GOP's U.S. Footprint has increased by 50% to 173 million square feet, and that positions us as the second largest logistic property owner and operator in the country. The U.S. logistic real estate market have been experiencing some solid growth. You can see it in our rent renewals and also our peers. Within our existing portfolio, we're also seeing some strong leasing, and we have seen some of the rent growth in the highest level in many years. And again, Steve will go through it in his section. At closing, GOP expects to own 100% of the portfolio by November 16, 2015. This new fund is already oversubscribed. We are in discussion with new and existing capital partners. Again, we expect to fully complete our syndication no later than April 2016, and by then we'll be owning 10%. Again, all this is going to be driven by CFIUS, which is a Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. Regulatory Approval Procedures. There is a good chance that we will close in November with all or most of capital partners lined up. Again, this is going to be based on the regulatory requirement and approval timing. But as I mentioned, we have discussed with investors from the beginning, and so far the books have been already oversubscribed. In the U.S., we expect to generate in the mid-teens IRR for our 10% shares. That's including the return on the real estate plus the fund management income. We do not expect to issue any additional equity fund this transaction. It will be bar at 60% on the asset level, and we have already secured very attractive long-term financing, and that's already, the rates already locked in. The initial capital equity would be $1.9 billion, and that would be coming from our existing cash on hand plus credit facility. Currently, GLP has $2.3 billion of cash on balance sheet, and we have another $1.5 billion proceed coming from the in-core syndication. In summary, in line with GOP's strategy, leveraging the strong on-the-ground team that we have already built up, we're going to continue to grow our portfolio there. Our underwriting is very conservative, and we're still going to get to a mid-teen IRR. We feel very positive about rental upside and the location of these assets. And we've seen strong fundamentals, not just in our portfolio, but also you can see from our peers' assets as well. Post this transaction, U.S. will be represent about 6% of our overall NAV. Now with that, we'd like to turn to China Logistics Fund 2. Again, China is our primary market for development. COFS 2 provides a long-term capital to help us capture the network effect and better serve our customer demands. Fees and promote generate on partners' capital enhance our return by 400 to 500 basis points on average. COF2 expect to start acquiring land later this year and commence construction of new development in April 2016. And before I hand over to Steve, I'd like to, since we're talking about China Logistics Fund 2, I'd like to share with you what we see on the ground. As I mentioned last couple quarters, economic growth in China is moderating. And again, the recent volatility in the capital markets have some impact on the customer sentiments to a certain extent. While most of our customers continue to see strong business growth, we have some customers who are scaling back business due to slow anticipated growth going forward. As I mentioned last quarter, we have strong capital discipline, and if we see a change in demand, we will slow down starts if we need to. While new and expansion leases in China were very strong, up 29%, to 690,000 square meters. We have decided proactively to adjust down our development start and completion by approximately 20% to be more cautious. And again, Steve can cover this in more greater details. But I just want to highlight that despite the revision, the group still expect to start and complete for the year So starts still be up 13%, and completions still be up 76% year on year on a U.S. dollar basis. And just to put things in perspective, our annual starts for this year in China still is twice the size of the next closest competitor, the number two player in China. And we're also very encouraged that actually in July, after the quarter closed in July, we've seen a very strong leasing of over 300,000 square meters for the month. Again, the beauty of our business is that the flexibility of the skill up and down. And as a market leader, we are in the position to control to a large extent how much supply comes into a particular market. Relatively short development cycles allow us to ramp up and down based on the customer demands. And again, because of our ability to communicate with our customers, we have a pretty good visibility on future demands, as two-thirds of our new facilities are leased to existing customers. Just to give you a quick update, 2 quarters ago I mentioned a few markets that were facing some short-term oversupplies. I'm happy to tell you that, as I mentioned, those are relatively short-term, and we expect in a couple quarters it will be picked back up, because most of that supply was supplied by us completing multiple projects in one city. And we have seen that to be the case. So I mentioned 2 quarters ago that Wuhan was weak and Shenyang was weak. I'm happy to tell you that both of these markets, as the last quarter, both rebounded to lease up over 91%. And given the lack of modern facilities in these markets, we still expect that to continue to perform well. There are a couple other markets we continue to see weakness, one of them being Tianjin. We have seen some new supply, mostly also contributed by us and to the market. But Beijing is hardly impossible, basically impossible to get land for logistic purposes in Beijing anymore. So, and a lot of manufacturing and markets are being pushed out of Beijing. We expect Tianjin will be the benefactor of that. So in the mid to long term, Tianjin is still a very good market to be in. Again, we want to reiterate our long-term positive view on the market. Leasing pipeline remain healthy, substantial number of customers with expansion demands, and we expect this is an opportunity to support them and grow with them. E-commerce, retail, and automotive industry is still growing very strong. We've seen some niche sectors like the solar panels have some weakness, and also we've seen some consolidations even within the e-commerce sector. So we are proactively turning those customers. As I mentioned, July was a very strong month for us, over 300,000 square meter leasing. And our stabilized portfolio as of today stood at, as of in the last quarter, stood at 88%. This is a little bit lower than what we'd like to see, but we expect this to be back to the 90% level next quarter. And again, I think going forward in the next couple quarters, we continue to monitor it very closely. I expect it will be hover around 90% with up and down 1-2% over next couple quarters. And with that, I'd like to turn to Steve.
Thanks, Ming. We had a very strong quarter operationally across all our markets, due in large part to the efforts of our teams on the ground. I'm going to touch on leasing, development, and what we are seeing in general in each market, and then talk a bit about our fund business. So turning to China on slide 7. On the leasing front, we signed 690,000 square meters of new and expansion leases in the quarter, which is up almost 30% year on year, and was led by e-commerce, retail, and automotive sectors. Now, one of the barometers we use to measure portfolio strength is repeat business. And of the 690,000 square meters of activity, almost 70% was with existing customers. That's a number we really like, and it reflects the importance of our network effect and ongoing bond, synergy, and connection with our customer base. During the quarter, we also had a 63% retention rate and saw a very healthy rollover rental growth of 7.3%. So in general, we continue to see very solid and ongoing activity in our core markets, and the retention, rental growth, and leasing volume all bear that out. On the development front, we had $387 million of starts in the quarter, or roughly 831,000 square meters of space, and we had $77 million of completions, or 175,000 square meters of space, with development margins and leasing velocity staying in line with our internal forecasts. As Ming mentioned in his prepared remarks, we are adopting a more judicious approach to our FY16 development targets and proactively lowering them, where starts will be $1.7 billion this year. That's down from our original $2.2 billion target, but still up 5% from our starts last year. And completions are going to be $1.2 billion. That's down from our original $1.4 billion target, but up 12% from our completions last year. We feel that this prudent approach to starts and completions is a good long-term complement to our current strong operating performance and robust land reserve. Now, we've talked a lot before about access to land, and getting land in key markets remains increasingly difficult. We did acquire 670,000 square meters of buildable area from our land reserve this quarter, which leaves us with 12.4 million square meters of buildable area remaining, or roughly 3 years of development going forward. So as access to land is increasingly scarce, we are very fortunate to have a solid reserve in the wings, and the consortium's ability to supplement our access is more key than ever. For the portfolio, we saw a 25 basis point compression of cap rates during the quarter to 6.5%, which was driven by tighter land supply and the lower interest rate environment. So overall, we are very pleased with the operating performance in China this quarter, particularly the significant leasing volume and rental growth we experienced. And with a circumspect approach to our developments, we feel this will serve the shareholders well going forward. Turning to Japan on slide 8, overall, the fundamentals in Japan remain very strong, with solid demand and limited supply, all of which continue to benefit our portfolio. Taking a look at leasing, we signed 60,000 square meters of new and expansion leases for the quarter, which is up almost 120% year-on-year, and experienced a healthy 5.5% rental growth on renewals. Occupancy ticked down slightly to 98% as we're in between leases, so we expect this will rebound in the near term. As for development activity, we started $41 million this quarter and remain confident in meeting our $1 billion target for the year. And in the second quarter, there will be significant activity on the starts column. Alongside our starts, we completed $242 million in developments this quarter and are likewise confident in meeting our annual target of $720 million. A good indicator of the market strength is our lease-up of completions, and our two buildings comprising the $242 million of completions are doing very well. Ayase is 100% leased, and Zama is almost 30% leased, and we expect it to reach 100% within the next 6 months. As for the portfolio, cap rates were down about 11 basis points to 4.9%, and we continue seeing competition putting pressure on development margins. Nonetheless, we did see healthy margins in our recent completions of approximately 40%, but expect those to normalize at 25 to 30% in the near term. All told, as the market leader in Japan, we are fortunate to have a strong development pipeline this year and feel that vacancies will remain low with demand continuing to be strong. Turning to Brazil on slide 9, despite the headline economic news, our portfolio is performing very well and supply and demand fundamentals remain quite healthy. Leasing remains a highlight, and we signed 82,000 square meters of new and expansion leases for the quarter. In fact, it was one of our strongest quarters ever. And in FY15, our quarterly average for comparison was 34,000 square meters. We also saw 8.4% same property NOI growth and 6.2% rental growth on renewals. While occupancy did go down to 94%, this was largely due to new stabilized assets coming online. And with our current pipeline, we expect this will trend back up by the end of the year. Turning to development, we completed $134 million in development this quarter, which is up over 200% year-on-year. And the three warehouses in Guarulhos making up those completions are already 55% occupied. For the portfolio, cap rates remain at 10%, and we are watching for the central bank's modifications to interest rates to see what, if any, impact may result. So we continue pushing a tailored approach to developments matched with our leasing velocity, and performance thus far in Brazil has been better than expected. This highlights that even as GDP growth may be soft, the outsourcing trend toward modern warehouses is viable. And given that 100% of our warehouses are used for domestic consumption purposes, we feel it will remain sustainable throughout the year. Turning to the U.S. on slide 10, growth in e-commerce, manufacturing output, and trade volumes and a market where absorption continues to outpace supply have created a very favorable environment for us in the U.S. We had record leasing activity and signed 7.5 million square feet of total leasing for the quarter, which was our biggest ever. We also saw a net effective rent growth on renewals of almost 21%. Our retention rate was 76%, and overall occupancy was at 92%. And looking forward, we feel that our target of 94% occupancy should happen by the end of the year. In short, the portfolio's performance this quarter was outstanding, and we cannot overstate the dedication and efforts of our team there. And as the market fundamentals continue to see limited availability and disciplined supply, we think this bodes very well for the rest of the year. For the portfolio, cap rates remained at 6%, and we may see some small compression in the near term. And other than portfolio performance, we obviously remain very focused on completing our first syndication, and the regulatory process continues moving forward without incident, so we expect our interest to be at the 10% level by sometime in November. Turning to our fund platform on slide 11, this continues to be a rapidly expanding and increasingly important component of our business. And this quarter, we recognized $36 million in fees, which is up 64% year on year. And we reiterate our forecast of $150 million of fund fees for the year. We also announced the formation of our second China Logistics Fund recently, which grew that platform by 36% to now total $27.1 billion assets under management. With the fund platform having roughly $10 billion of uncalled capital, we expect that there will be substantial growth in fees going forward as well. As Ming mentioned, we also entered into an agreement to acquire the IIT portfolio for $4.55 billion, which will also be syndicated down to a 10% interest at or shortly after closing, and will serve as another catalyst to enhance our operating margins in the U.S. while further enhancing our fund platform. So in summary, with the strong and continued growth of our fund platform, our measured performance across all markets, including record leasing in China, Brazil, and the U.S., with excellent fundamentals in Japan, we are very pleased with our operating performance this quarter and look forward to a successful year. With that, I'll turn it over to Heather.
Thanks, Steve. Starting this year, we stopped using pro forma financials and provide a lot more transparency in country-specific results. We hope this is going to help with your understanding of the company and analysis. We welcome any feedback and suggestions you may have to make it even better. Coming back to the financial results, first quarter revenue was up 12% to $190 million U.S. dollar, driven by China completion and lease up, and the first full quarter inclusion of U.S. fee income of $12 million. This was offset by the impact of J-REIT contribution as well as yen depreciation. In terms of earnings, our first quarter earning of PATMI was up 49% to $268 million, driven by cap rate compression and development gains. Excluding revaluations, earnings was down 7%, mainly due to dilution from the China Consortium transaction. Excluding China Consortium investments impact, the first quarter earnings, excluding revaluation, was up 14%. On slide 14, the country performance. China and Japan earnings were up 50% and 22% respectively, driven by development and fair value gains. The fair value gains were driven mainly by cap rate compression in those two countries. During the period, cap rates in China and Japan compressed 25 and 11 basis points respectively to a cap rate of 6.5 and 4.9%. Brazil and U.S. cap rate remained stable at 10% and 6% respectively. Brazil did benefit from development profit of the two completed projects and rental growth indexed to inflation. U.S. earnings this quarter reflect the first full quarter impact. On slide 15, the capital structure and balance sheet. GLP strengthened its capital structure with the completion of more than $1.3 billion financing in the past quarter. This includes $1 billion U.S. denominated fixed rate notes with an interest rate of 3.9% per annum, and a JPY $40 billion of 7-year term loan with an interest rate of 1.1%. USD notes are in GLP's functional currency, therefore there's no FX impact. Yen-denominated loans will serve as a hedge to further reduce our long-term currency exposure in Japan. The group debt maturity also has been extended significantly from 3.9 years to 5.6 years. Percentage of fixed rate debt increased from 62% to 75%. This obviously is very beneficial to us in the current environment of a greater uncertainty. On the balance sheet, you can see that GLP have a very strong cash position, stood at $2.3 billion at quarter end. After completion of the syndication of ICON, we expect another $1.5 billion come back. Pro forma net debt to assets, assuming GLP's 10% equity stake in both the U.S. Income Partners 1 and the IIT transaction, will be 14% on a look-through basis, still at a very healthy pace. Lastly, I would like to cover the accounting treatment of the U.S. IIT transaction. At day one, we will own 100% of the assets, so we will recognize 100% of the earnings. Once we sell down to 50% and below, in other words, when we lose control, we will have earning pickup for the 10% we intend to keep and recognize the remaining as assets held for sale. The unrecognized earnings will be recognized once we complete the syndication. So with that, I will hand back to me.
I guess we can open up for Q&A.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Please be reminded to keep your questions to 2 at a time and ask them together when it comes to you. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of Paul Lian from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey Ming, this is Paul here. I just wanted to check if you, so the guidance for development starts in FY16 is down, but does that change your 3 to 5 year view of 30 to 40% per annum increase?
Thanks, Paul. No, I do not. I think the fundamentals, the midterm, the long-term of the industry and the sector are still very positive, and that have not changed. It's just that the recent capital market instance have created some concern with some customers, and we just want to take a more conservative approach. Again, if things stabilize and normalize and we kind of clear all that and don't see the impact, we may decide to ramp up our development start again. We had, in June in particular, we had quite a bit of move out, and that's why our leasing continued to be strong, but the move out in June was quite high, and that was due to some of the sectors that are a little bit weaker. But again, in July, leasing was very strong, and the move out was very low. So that's why we're getting conflicted signals from our customers at this point, and as a company, as I mentioned to you the last couple quarters, we're going to be more disciplined, and we have no issue with slowdown if we're not sure about the short term, and we have and we'd be happy to drive that up once we see more concrete evidence. So to answer your question in short is that in the next 3 to 5 years, I have still committed to that. And again, everything's going to be driven by customer demand.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And we have another question over the web from Varun Ahuja from JP Morgan. The question is, could you guide on the comfortable leverage target and also whether you'd continue to look to maintain BBB ratings while pursuing growth?
As you can see, currently our debt to asset and net debt to asset still at a very healthy 20% and 10% range. There's plenty of room actually to increase leverage if we want to. We do intend to keep the current credit rating. We are working closely with the rating agencies to better understand the business. We did commit to rating agency that as a target, we will not be leveraged more than 40%. In other words, debt to assets will not exceed 40%. We still have a plenty of room.
All right, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of YK Wong from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. I just want to check on the second U.S. deal, the asset value of 4.55 and 4.8 million. Is the difference purely attributable to transaction costs? Because that looks pretty high to me.
Yes. Well, the service in the U.S. They're good, but they also charge it accordingly. So yes, you're right. The difference is in transaction costs, and also part of that is we also to make sure that we have a smooth transition. We also pay a small fee for the existing team platform to provide a transitional period for the portfolio. But that's a one-time event. And then also we are absorbing no employees from that platform. So going forward, that would be all managed out of existing team that we have.
Okay. Second question for me is the revision in guidance for China, right? Is it prompted by specific sectors that you are less comfortable with the growth forward? Is it certain sectors that's changing your view on China growth, which is why you're lowering down? Or?
No, actually, as I mentioned, it's purely because of we've seen a weakness in June, but it picked back up in July. So is this we've seen some mixed signals. But so far, the leasing even June was strong. It's just that we had a higher move out from some of the customers. Again, some of the customers are certain e-commerce companies that are being consolidated by their competitors, and then also some of the weaker segment like solar panels. We've seen some slowdown that. But overall, the feedback from our customers that. Outlook still continue to be quite healthy. And then again, as mentioned, July we have a very strong leasing month again, but the move out was very minimal. So we're just going to take a more cautious look and be very disciplined in this environment.
Thanks.
Let me just add a little bit more color in terms of transaction cost. Out of the $254 million of the transaction cost, actually $100 million was related to the existing loan termination. We think it's extremely beneficial because the current, the existing loan that they already have is longer duration and at much higher cost. So for us, it's obviously to our best interest to extend to a longer term. So the new loan that we're putting in place was 7-10 years. With actually lower overall interest cost. In the environment of the U.S., I think we probably all believe that interest is going to rise. This is obviously very important for us. The other $60 million are related to putting those financing together. So overall, even though the transaction cost looks a little bit high, but then in the long run, I think extremely beneficial and important for us to do that.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Xing Song Du from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Could you give us a bit more granular information on, your outlook for China? For example, you talk about there are conflicting signals in June and July, on weakening and, strengthening. Could you explain a bit more, like, which sectors are strengthening and which sectors are weakening in terms of, your tenants? And also maybe domestic tenants versus, international tenants in China, which are weaker or which are stronger? And also for your, because you are slowing down, the target of expansion in the near term, and give us a bit more granular information on, for example, which city you are keeping the original plan and in which cities, you are slowing down and why. For example, you mentioned that in Wuhan and Shenyang, it has actually improved, and what's the reasons, and any other cities that have weakened recently. Yeah, just a bit more granular information on China would be great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before I get into the details, I just want to kind of put things in perspective. When we say we slow down a little bit in the short term, we are still putting out more than three million square meters. Just to put things in perspective, that is twice the entire size of the second largest player in China that they have done in the last 10 years. So I just want to put things in perspective that we're not saying that we're going negative. We are just being a little bit more cautious and kind of wait. I don't want to send the wrong signal that things are not going not things are worse than it is. To answer your question, what we've seen in some of the weaker sectors in June and also what we're seeing in July, I cannot name specific customer names, obviously. But again, as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing some sectors like, solar panel was weak. We also seen some clothing online retailers being consolidated by others. We're also seeing that, in general, domestic e-commerce companies are doing better and stronger than international ones. We continue to see strong demand from the food sector and the day-to-day consumption. We still see strong demand from the after-sales auto parts. I think the OEM for the OEM for the auto parts for new cars that we've seen slow down, but we've seen a strong pickup in demand and the install base, the after sales service auto parts. As far as city goes, I would say that first tier cities supply is very constrained, and that those markets continue to perform very well and expect rent to grow very strong in those markets. In the second tier cities, overall, we still continue to see strong demand. As I mentioned, a lot of supply mainly are contributed by GLP. A lot of times we have multiple projects completing in the city at the same time, and that short-term can provide oversupply. But again, we're talking about 1 to 2 quarters. As I mentioned, the two cities that were weak 2 quarters ago are now back up to, Wuhan was 78% for us 2 quarters ago, and now we are above 91%. The market I mentioned is going to continue to face some challenges. It's going to be Tianjin because there were a lot of supply, also a lot that contributed by GOP as well in the city. But I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but Beijing basically not only limiting virtually no industrial land being put into the system for logistic purposes or for any manufacturing purposes, Beijing City is cleaning up to serve as a capital city. They're even asking the central office of Beijing City to move out into suburbs. So basically, they're pushing out even the retail markets for the commodity markets for food, retail. All these are being pushed out and being relocated to in the suburbs or in Tianjin to Tianjin. So we expect Tianjin will benefit from that shift. Another market we're seeing some challenges in Dalian. Dalian is traditionally very export import driven, so I continue with the weakness in the in that sector. We see Dalian is also a bit challenging, but other than that, overall, the rest of the market seems to still doing quite well. And again, 70% of the new leases were signed by existing customers. So in general, we have a pretty good visibility about existing customer demands, and so we continue to monitor that closely. And in our business, the beauty about it is that we're able to ramp up and down in a very short cycle. unlike other sectors in real estate where you know, it's harder to cap it. And we proved that in 2008 during the financial crisis and end of 2008 and beginning 2009, we shut down every development and we only have a few million dollars of incurred costs to slow that down. And then we're able to ramp it back up second half of 2009. So again, this is the you're going to continue to see us to adjust up and down based on what we see in the market. And being a market leader, we want to be disciplined to maintain rental growth. Again, the first thing you will see to go in the oversupply market is going to be rental growth. And so far, we still see healthy rental growth, and we want to maintain that.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brandon Lee from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Morning, Ming. Just a couple of questions. On the U.S. deal, could you explain why this time around there wasn't any additional partners and you have to take 100% from the beginning? And the second question is more on the land reserve that you have right now. How many percentage of debt this quarter was contributed by the consortium partners which you announced last year? Thanks.
Thank you, Brent. So to answer your question, we have not closed the transaction yet. So I wouldn't make that conclusion that we'll be closing by ourselves. So all this is going to be going through the – it's going to be a procedure and process, and also our capital partners that their internal process, whether it can meet the – CFIUS filing requirement by the U.S. as well. So all that's going to be driven. So I would not draw the conclusion that we'll be funding 100% ourselves. We just prepare to do 100% if the timing doesn't work out. But again, our capital partners are very advanced in their in their processes already. So I would not be surprised that we would close with some of our partners or all our partners at the closing. And I would say reiterate that based on the partners that are in the process of doing due diligence and going through the various level of internal processes, the demand from those already oversubscribed to the over the amount that's available on equity portion. So we feel very confident that we will have this completed and only 10% at the end of the day. To answer to your question on the land, typically from the land that we draw down on our balance sheet, is about 70% of that is coming from the land reserve section, and I can't give you specific projects what was being, but typically about 20% of the land has been supported by the consortium. And what I think I just want to give you a reminder how a land process works is that typically we have land that we draw down on balance sheet, but that is from land that's from the reserve section. The land reserve takes 2 years process. So what you haven't seen a lot of work that's being done is the land that we've been working on that are being converted into land reserve. Because we typically keep about 1.5 to 2 years of land on balance sheet, but we keep twice that amount on reserve, and then we have twice that amount of reserve under negotiation at any given time to continue to replenish. And that's why we're able to continue to grow up our market position in China. So a lot of work that is not being seen by the work the consortium that's helping us is the work of land under negotiation and put into reserve. So you continue to see more and more of that impact. You know, one of our consortium partners, China Development Bank, we just set up a joint venture with them, and I can tell you half of the industrial parks and 60% of the highways and railroads are financed by China Development Bank. So is very strong and powerful for them to partner with us and go into the area that they finance and tell the local government, said, GLP is our partner and we'd like to develop this area. So again, you continue to see a lot more of that benefit coming through.
Thank you. I'll hand over to you, Ambika.
Great. We have a question from LaSalle asking, when GLP syndicates out the IIT portfolio, are the partners paying 90% of $4.8 billion or $4.55
billion? It would be $4.8 billion because the partner will pay their share of the transaction cost as well.
And then we have another webcast question from BlackRock asking, where is the e-commerce weakness within our portfolio in China?
So the question was where an e-commerce weakness. In general, e-commerce continue to grow as a total portfolio and what we based on what we see. Total retail is growing at double digit, but e-commerce continue to grow even faster than that. And again, what we like is organized retail, and e-commerce is the form of organized retail that use our large facilities. In general, I think we've seen that the logo startup. Domestic e-commerce players continue to be very strong. I think they actually overtaking some of the international players in this space. So that's and then also you can continue to see some consolidation in some of the sectors. In the clothing sectors, we're seeing some consolidation as well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ellie Lee from OCBC Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. You painted a pretty cautious near-term outlook in China. I understand that the 25 bips cap rate compression in China was primarily due to lower interest rates. Was this backed up by transactional values and rentals amongst your peers as well? My second question is regarding the lease ratio. Could you talk about the key expectations, the key drivers behind your expectation that it will normalize to a 90% level ahead? And what is the likelihood that we could see this number accelerate, dip further if uncertainties in China accelerate to the downside? Thank you.
Well, thank you. As I mentioned, the benefit we have is that we have a pretty good visibility. Up back to 90% is based on leases under negotiation and also demand from customers that for space that's spoken for, and also accounted for new space that coming into the stabilized pool that being leased up. So all those has been calculated down to per leases and tally up. So our team have is not based on said we hope for better. It's all based on leases that are under negotiation, leases that are already under contract. So, we're already 1 month, 1/3 behind on the next quarter. So that gives us a pretty good visibility. As far as you said cap rate compression, I would say that our portfolio continues to lead in the market on both in the rental growth and the cap rate compression, our valuation on our asset is based on a formula provided by is done by outside third party, but it's not purely based on a cap rate. 50% is on cap rate and 50% is based on cash flow analysis. So the recent cap rate 25 basis point is driven by supply and demand, and also interest rate reduction, but the other 50% value valuation is based on rental and cash flow. So we have not seen the immediate benefit of the entire 25 basis point compression yet. We've only seen about half of that being reflected in the valuation.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Lim from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Ming. I've got a question on the U.S. portfolio, the first one. If I look at the supplementary material, the rents there were $588 in the last set of materials, but this time around it's been brought down to $476. Can you just explain the difference?
I'll take this question. It's a difference between gross rents and net rents. So what happens is in the U.S. it's a triple net lease, so the customers actually pay their share of expenses. So the original number was the gross basis. So if you want to tie to the actual revenue numbers, you use the 5.88. But we changed it this quarter because we wanted to use U.S. practices, and they quote the net number, which is 4.79, the number that we had. So it's just normalizing to U.S. standards on how they quote rents.
Okay, thank you. And if I can follow up, now that you've seen China cap rates compress, earlier in the year you spoke about potentially looking at an income fund as well. Is that something that you're more comfortable with since valuations have gone up, or you think there's still some way to go for cap rates?
I believe that there's still some room for cap rate. I also believe that interest rate in China will continue to be lower. And if you look at real interest rate and real growth, there's still a big gap. And so I think you would expect interest rates to continue to come down in China. And so, but that is, we're not going to be set up, we're not setting up a fund or not set up a fund based purely on cap rate. It's going to be based on a mix of other factors as well. So I think to answer your question, we are committed to set up a core income fund for our portfolio. And again, a lot of that's going to be driven by also our cash balance and our cash usage as well. But based on our development, current development pace and size and scale, we will be in a pretty good position to do that towards the end of the year.
Thank you. Well, I'll hand it back to Ameka.
Hi, we have a question from the webcast asking, from Standard Life, are you still actively looking for other acquisition opportunities?
Yeah, this is Steve. The obviously our first, growing in the U.S. in a span of about 11 months to 173 million square feet is, and operating that portfolio or those portfolios is our first priority. What we've tried to do, and I think you saw this in our second acquisition of the IIT portfolio, is to give a little bit of more advanced notice. And we had mentioned that we were looking at other portfolios in the U.S., I think even back in, a month or two ago. And so we're going to try and be as open as we can about that. So if we're really not talking about something, then the odds are that we're not really taking a hard look at the market. Now, with that said, we really like the fundamentals in the U.S. If something else did come along that was opportunistic, it was accretive, it's something that we would definitely take a hard look at. So within the markets that we're in, we believe in them. We would continue to grow and expand in them, and if the right opportunities came along, we would do that. But that aside, we still have a lot that we have to digest and get internalized that we're very focused on for right now.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brandon Lee of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Ming, it's me again. Can I just ask you about Japan? It seems that your capital recycling there has been a bit quiet. I think previously you were guiding for like 300, 500 million of divestments through REIT per year. Is there a change in that? And secondly, what's the guided net debt to assets after the CLF 2 as well as the recent IIT acquisition? Thanks.
Okay, maybe talk about the...
Let's talk about net debt.
Okay. The net debt, actually, CLF2 is going to take a little bit of time, actually, to deploy. We just announced it. So I think you're probably going to only see the financial impact, I would say, 2-3 years out at least, because during the development phase, the leverage, especially the interest, obviously, will be capitalized. So in terms of financial metrics, it's not going to have an immediate impact. For IIT, at the beginning, as Ming mentioned, it's also likely that we may come in with other partner day one, but then to be conservative, we assumed we'll put 100% from very beginning. But then we are expecting by April we can complete the syndicate out, only holding 10%, and we think we're on track doing that. So because we only hold 10% of the overall portfolio, actually on look-through basis, it's not going to have a material impact on our overall leverage.
You know, I just want to reiterate that having a conservative balance sheet, obviously you don't get the highest return with leverage returns, but again, having a conservative balance sheet gives us the ability to capture opportunities when they arise. So we would not be in a position to close this transaction if we didn't have the balance sheet to stand by it. And again, it's about confidence with the buyer and seller. If the seller doesn't see us have the ability to close on our own, they wouldn't be talking to us as well. So I just want to highlight that it is a competitive advantage that have a strong conservative balance sheet, and we continue to commit to that. So, Brendan, to answer your question about our commitment and support on the J-REIT, there's no doubt we will continue to support and commit to the J-REIT and to grow that asset under management. You mentioned that it's been quiet. Actually, if you look at it, every year is almost identical. It's around second quarter financial year. Usually by August, September is when we contribute to the J-REIT. So we're not there yet.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Derek Tan of DBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Can I just seek some clarification on slide 24? It seems that for the Chinese, the China Logistics Fund 1 has not really been fully deployed at this point, and you have now CLF2. I'm just curious, how would you look at allocation of capital between the two funds? And if you look at CLF2, could you give a sense of what kind of cities are you targeting at this point in time, and how different would it be compared to CLF1? Thanks.
Okay. So our commitment to our capital partners, investors, that whenever we have a particular fund with a very defined scope, until that fund is fully invested, we will not compete or invest with a second fund. So to answer your question, we expect CF1 to complete early next year, and then we'll have the second fund to pick up to continue to support our growth. The CF1 has been investing in all the major markets that we're currently in, so it's existing markets. We're just expanding our market share in those markets.
I also want to add, even though CF1 has not been fully spent yet, but actually the product has been identified and committed actually early the year. So so CF2 is not in competition. There's no conflict interest in that regard.
Thank you. I'll now hand it back to Ambika.
We have a question from BlackRock from our webcast. The question is, have you seen a pickup in developments from peers, including clients building their own properties? And so does this explain moderated demand for your property?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of noise about customers building their own facilities. I think I can count on one hand of the customers that built some of their own facilities. But I would say even the one that built their own facilities, they end up leasing more than they built. I mean, a classic example is that JD.com, they lease a lot more space from us than they own, and they will lease a lot more space from us going forward in the future than they will own. So again, I would say that the owner themselves, the user themselves, are moving towards traditionally 100% owner-occupy to leasing. I mean, not only the new companies, even the traditional state-owned companies that used to build everything themselves, even the real estate companies that used to build everything themselves are leasing from us for their retail needs. So I think the trend only go towards more of a leasing model instead of a owner model. So I'm not sure if that answered the question.
Thank you. I'll hand it over to Ming for closing remarks.
Well, thank you. In summary, I'd like to recap that we've seen a very strong start to financial year across our business, and we expect this momentum to continue throughout the financial year. I'm very excited about the year ahead. We have the right strategy and, most importantly, the right team to focus on our mission of being the best operator. We create value through development and expand our fund management platform. Our goal is to always to be the provider and partner of choice for our customer and co-investors. We are running local business with a strong local team who have deep knowledge of our customers. We stay very close to our customers, which gives us the confidence to invest as we have a good visibility over their future needs. This insight into the future demand will support our development activity throughout the coming years. The major activity we have seen in our fund management platform recently have signaled the importance of this business to our future growth. We're fortunate that we have the support of a major global institutional investors who are keen to tap into our expertise in the logistics sector. This platform is a highly efficient use of capital for GLP, enabling us to scale our business effectively while delivering a higher risk-adjusted returns. Again, I want to thank everyone for dialing today.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.